Good evening, you. How are you doing? It is Thursday the 13th. That's not easy to say. Of March. It's March 13th, 2024. How are you? Hope you had a good day. It's raining dats and cogs here in Salford. But if that's the least of our worries, then it isn't, you know. It never is.
Uncensored. Unfiltered. You're listening to Richie Allen on the world's most popular independent news radio show.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Lovely. Yeah, it's you and me today, flying solo today. This Wednesday, it's Wednesday. I said Thursday, didn't I? I know. I bet you are reaching for the app at the speed of light to tell me you're getting ahead of yourself, Richie. It's Wednesday. It's a weird one, this. It's a weird one. When you do what I do, and you're basically eternally locked in media monitoring, morning, noon and night, days, weeks, months bleed into one. You don't know where you are, to be honest with you. Tomorrow, of course, is Thursday. I should know this. I mean, the bottom right-hand side, or the bottom right-hand corner of three screens are telling me it is Wednesday. You can, of course, reach out to me during the programme. Use the app, the Richie Allen Show app. Use the website, richieallen.co.uk. Do speak amongst yourselves as well. Have a chat. Why not? Why don't you? The BBC is reporting this afternoon that a UN aid convoy has managed to open a new land route from Israel to reach North Gaza, where the United Nations is saying famine is looming there. Delivering food today for the first time in 3 weeks. The Israeli military has said, or has told the BBC, that six lorries from the World Food Programme crossed via a gate in the Gaza border fence. This happened last night, by the way. And it's not enough. A lot more needs to happen. The BBC's David Gritton reporting says this comes amid global pressure on Israel to allow more access to the Palestinian territory for aid amid a looming famine as Israel continues its war on Hamas. The BBC won't tell the truth. Israel is not waging war on Hamas. It's waging war on the people of Gaza. And we know this. You know, it's well known now. It has been said by many, hasn't it? This is the first genocide ever documented by the victims of it. The videos are all over the internet. The evidence is there. As long as it is allowed to remain online, it is there. A boat carrying 200 tons of food aid for distribution by a charity also set sail from Cyprus on Tuesday, inaugurating a new maritime corridor into the Palestinian territory. That should arrive tomorrow off Gaza's coast. They're building a jetty there to enable that aid to get in. I don't want to dwell on it because I don't want to upset you, because there isn't anything you can do about it other than voice your opinion, which is a good thing. You know, you can at least stand up and say this is terribly wrong, what is happening, what has been happening there for 7.5 decades. But there's very little we can do about it. Only hope, really. All right, 3.5 minutes past the hour. I look forward to your comments. There is a lot to get into today. And I chose to fly solo. I want to have a chat with you about a few really interesting things. I want to talk momentarily, just for a few minutes, about race rows. And it's a theme that I've explored on this programme many times over the years, in terms of trying to get a bit deeper into it, a deeper dive, as the cool kids say, into what's really going on. There is an interesting piece written today by Chris Mason on the BBC News website, headlined, "Politicians Flounder as They Wrestle with Race Rows." Very interesting headline, "Politicians Flounder as They Wrestle with Race Rows." So I'm going to read you a very little bit of this. So it opens the article. He says, Frank Hester, Diane Abbott, Lee Anderson, Azar Ali, four people over the last 4 weeks or so who tell us something about money, power, individuals and institutions, and also tell us something about language and labels, their capacity to anger, enrage, offend. Labels. Labels and language. The capacity of labels and language to anger, enrage and offend. Chris Mason writes, it is a month to the day since the Labour Party disowned its then candidate Azar Ali in the Rochdale by-election over alleged anti-Semitism he apologised for. Now, if you remember, Ali was recorded at a meeting late last year suggesting, in his opinion, that Israel had allowed the October 7th attack by Hamas. Israel had allowed it to happen so that Israel could use it as the pretext for a full invasion of the Palestinian territory. Is that a hanging offence, offering an opinion like that? Well, he was disowned by Labour. The election was won by George Galloway. So, he writes Chris Mason, what had come before? Turmoil about what to do, a party grappling with what should be the appropriate response. Senior figures sent out to do interviews with a line to take that crumbled not long later. The party accused of condemnation in words, but not in actions, until that is, they chose to act. Then there was the row about Lee Anderson, the now Reform UK MP and former Tory deputy chairman, and a debate with language and labels at its core. Anderson's remarks about Sadiq Khan, who is Muslim, were branded unacceptable by the Prime Minister. Others, including Khan, said they were racist and Islamophobic. He had the whip removed by the Tory party. Was it a hanging offence to say that Sadiq Khan was controlled by Islamists? Was it? Was that a hanging offence? Should he have been suspended by the Tory party for saying something, whether it's true or not? Should he? What happened to the days when the news media would have rubbed their hands with glee and they would have gotten in touch with Sadiq Khan's advisers and Lee Anderson's advisers and said, right, we want you on a programme tonight just after the news. The two of you, we're going to thrash this out because it's interesting. No. Get rid of him. Suspend. Condemn. Everybody has to condemn it, you see. So it dominates public life now, right? Accusations of racism, sexism, homophobia, anti-Semitism, misogyny. It's dominating public life and public discourse and social media interactivity. It just completely dominates it. Hilarious, right? Talking heads on news shows, falling over themselves to condemn. Pretty mild stuff too, they're condemning, you know. Now, you do condemn those remarks, don't you? The guest shits in his pants and says, yes, of course I condemn. I utterly condemn. Racist, offensive, misogynistic comments. It's become like Tourette's, hasn't it? It's become like Tourette's. Owen Jones started this. No, he didn't. God love him. God love Owen Jones. He's harmless, really. But he was famous for it 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. 15 years ago, even. Everything was racist, offensive, misogynist. Racist, offensive, misogynistic, homophobic. Disgusting. There's a word now. There is a word. Disgusting. Disgusting. But is it really disgusting? We'll come back to that in a moment. How does Chris Mason conclude his article today? Well, he says, a case study in how society in the 2020s is wrestling with these giant concepts. Belonging, identity, lived experience, heritage, language, labels and offence. And how are we collectively wrestling with all of this, asks Chris Mason. And his article finishes with two words. Deeply, awkwardly. Yes. Grooming. I think it's grooming. It's been going on for some time. Grooming the population to assign the utmost importance to feelings, to identity and to lived experience. These things have become sacred. They must not be challenged. They must not be spoken of. Now, we've always had clumsy language, always. Racist language, even. We've always had it. It's been around since Moses was in short trousers, right? Even offensive language, but we survived. We didn't use words like disgusting. We didn't ask others to condemn it, lest they be associated with it. Do you condemn that? Do you? Well, I didn't say it. But do you condemn it? But I didn't say it. But do you condemn it? Yeah, okay, I condemn it then. Fuck off. Leave me alone. I condemn it. Disgusting. It's not disgusting. What Frank Hester said about Diane Abbott is not disgusting. It indicates that Frank Hester is probably a right fucking moron, right? I mean, in every sense of the term moron. An idiot who speaks about anybody like that. But is it a hanging offence? We'll come back. We've always had it. Clumsy language, racist language. We've always had it. Racist jokes. I remember when Ethiopia was beset by famine. I remember children in the playground pulling forward the skin around their Adam's apple and asking their school chum, 10 years of age we were, what is this? It's an Ethiopian with a cornflake stuck in his throat. Ha 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 ha. Where do we hear that? Because your drunk father came in from the pub and told that joke. Was it racist? Maybe. Was it disgusting? No. So we've always dealt with things. So we've always dealt with things we can't understand. like death and destruction and earthquakes and murder. Remember that? Knocking on the floor, what's that? That's a door-to-door salesman in Armenia. You fucking hateful racist bastard. No, it's just a joke, really. We survived. The Armenians survived. They overcame. Their feelings weren't hurt, if they ever heard those gags. We always overcame our feelings, our hurty feelings. But there's a move now to escalate what was poorly chosen language, or even racist language. I'm willing to concede that Frank Hester might be a racist. He might be. As I said on yesterday's programme, I do not know, because I don't know him. But, I mean, this nonsense we have these days, to escalate poorly chosen language or racist language to capital crime levels, he must not be allowed to participate. Give the donation back. Give the donation back. Rishi Sunak said, no, Frank Hester gave 10 million quid to the Conservative Party. No, I won't give it back, says Rishi Sunak. I won't. I won't. It's like children today at PMQs. I won't give it back. No, no, no. Stephen Flynn, the SNP leader in Westminster, give the money back. No, no. No, I will not. Not give me the money back. It's already been spent. It's already been spent on God knows what. It's madness, this. So should Frank Hester, the buffoon, be banned from donating to a political party again because he used words that others found offensive? Diane Abbott is quite entitled to be annoyed with the arsehole. Of course she is. You know, he said, I look at her and she makes me want to hate black women. That's a bit pathetic. And then he said, she should be shot. That's pathetic too. They're equating that with a serious crime. They are alleging that somebody might listen to this and actually go and shoot Diane Abbott. They're saying this is possible because Joe Cox was murdered before the Brexit referendum and David Amos was stabbed to death in his constituency office. So, madness. Everybody's getting bogged down constantly with discussions around race and identity, screaming at one another, calling it out, demanding he or she be fired or return their donation or whatever, or don't platform them. It's madness, isn't it? I mean, to watch it is utter madness, especially if you are over a certain age, when you remember that this would never have been a thing. It wouldn't have been allowed. I want him expelled. What? He called me a dirty Irish pikey. But you are. No, no, they wouldn't have said that. They would have said, well, fucking take him on. Take him on. What's wrong with you, man? Grow up, take it on. Jesus, have a go back. Learn to look after yourself. Be a bit more robust, be a bit more resilient. It's not the end of the world. You know, it's about censorship, this. Of course it is. It's about censorship. It's about imposing the most insidious form of censorship there has ever been, and that is self-censorship. People will shit themselves in the future. You know, young people will not critique their peers. They won't comment on their appearance. They won't comment on their choice of clothing. Yeah, appearance. They won't critique their work. They won't. I remember the embarrassment when I did a City and Guilds course. I was sent to do a City and Guilds course years ago. I went on to be a City and Guilds instructor because I was good at it. But when I started out, you know, right, Richie, play that programme you made in front of about 25 other people who are studying radio production. What? Play that programme. And they were encouraged to pull it apart. And they did pull it apart. And they didn't pull any punches. Had to sit there and take it. Do you think that'll happen in the next few years? It won't happen. Diane Abbott was suspended by the Labour Party last year. Do you know why she was suspended, Diane Abbott? I went to town on this at the very time it happened. She was suspended by the Labour Party because she was responding to somebody on social media. Or maybe she wasn't. Maybe she was responding in writing an article online. It doesn't matter. I know exactly what she said. Somebody had written that Irish, Jewish and travellers, that's travellers, right, suffered racism. Diane Abbott said their experiences were similar to racism, but that there were differences. She said they undoubtedly experienced prejudice. This is similar to racism, and the two words are often used as if they are interchangeable. She went on to write, it is true that many types of white people with points of difference, such as redheads, can experience this prejudice. But they are not all their lives subject to racism. And she was gone. I've left nothing out. Nobody batted an eyelid. This is fucking insanity. She was gone. The leader of the Labour Party instructed the Labour Party to remove the whip from her because she said not all their lives subject to racism. Jews, travellers, Irish people have experiences similar to racism, but not quite, and they've not all their lives been subject to racism. And she was gone. She was gone. Nobody batted an eyelid. The idea is that this is so deeply offensive to Jews, to travellers and to ginger people that it is unforgivable. It's unforgivable. Not to mention that Jews and travellers, some of them, might say, well, you know what, I don't normally experience prejudice, maybe once or twice, but certainly not all my life. She was gone. She was gone. Imagine it. For saying that. For offering an opinion. A pretty neutral, I would have said, mild opinion. Today on Politics Live on the BBC, her former colleague Sarah Champion, an MP for Rotherham, was asked about when will Diane Abbott be allowed back into the Labour Party. Have a listen to this. I have no time for a single MP, so don't imagine for a minute that I am on the side of Diane Abbott or Rishi Sunak or anybody. I am not. Listen to Sarah Champion, MP, asked about when will Diane get back in. Now remember again, what I have given you is the 100% undiluted truth. That is what she said about Jews, travellers and Irish people. They experience prejudice, but not racism, and certainly not for all of their lives. Hanging offence. She's sitting on her own in the House of Commons. In fact, she was sitting on her own in the House of Commons today, and there are murders going on social media because during Prime Minister's questions, the Speaker of the House, Lindsay Hoyle, didn't call Diane Abbott to ask a question. He might be short in the game, Lindsay Hoyle. He might be on the move pretty soon. Anyhow, Sarah Champion asked about Diane Abbott. When the bloody hell is she coming back?
I'm grateful that Kemi Badenoch was the one that did stand up and say it, but it pains me that it had to be a black woman that stood up and said it, and it should have been the Prime Minister. I take very seriously that in my title I am the Honourable Member, and I don't think the way that the Tory party and particularly Rishi Sunak have acted is honourable in this case. We are talking about a woman. You know, she is iconic in our history. She was the first black woman MP, and I'm very proud of that.
And should she be allowed back into the party?
Should she be allowed back?
What should have happened on our side was when the investigation was called and she was suspended, it should have been swift, it should have been decisive.
It's been 11 months now.
And she either should have been thrown out of the party if they deem those comments to be anti-Semitic, or she should have been accepted back into the party. The fact that it's taken 11 months, that is not acceptable, and no other business would see that as acceptable.
And what should happen
finally,
now?
On the money, I go back to that honourable point. Yes, you know, we don't know what all of our members, what all of our donors do, but when it is in the public domain that someone is alleged at making those comments, when you are accepting as a party that what he said was racist, if he said it, then I think you do the honourable thing, not least because we're running into a general election, which is going to be very, very controversial, contentious, and there is a lot of racial tension in this country right now.
She would not be drawn on whether or not Diane Abbott should be admitted back into the Labour Party. So yeah, he Sunak should give the money back to this guy and shouldn't take money from him again because he said something crass, something crude. I'm not going to get into all the puritanical stuff. I won't get into it. But this holier-than-thou shit, this nonsense, this this idea that everybody, that any man or woman, that how do I put this, with any responsibility, any man or woman who might live a public life, that they've got to be as white as Jesus Christ. Or when I say white, I don't mean how Jesus would have looked, but as pure. You've got to be completely flawless. Never made a mistake in your life. Like I said, Frank Hester is probably a prize prick. Probably. And the language, yeah, I absolutely... Diane Abbott has the right to say that's racist language. She makes me want to hate all black women. She's entitled to say that. But should he be kicked out? Should he be basically ostracised, become untouchable forevermore? Like I said, the kids of the future will never comment on anything, on their peers particularly, in any way. Their appearance, their opinions, their work, they won't critique them. Silence. This is what this is all about. This is about censorship and silence. He was very good, Chris Mason, in his piece for the BBC today, in the way he phrased and framed some of that. A case study right now in how society is wrestling with things like identity, belonging, lived experience, language, labels and offence. These things were unimaginable when I first entered university. Unimaginable. Is that anybody could lose their status, that they could be demoted, they could be expelled, they could be kicked out, they could be ostracised because they said something, no matter what they said. No matter what they said. This is the Richie Allen Show for Thursday. Wednesday, what is wrong with me, eh? I've got some really interesting things to talk about now for the next, hour and a half or more. Really interesting things. I'd love to hear from you. Do reach out to me via the app or via the website. The Richie Allen Show, of course, is archived on Podomatic.com, iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere else you do receive your podcast. It's time for me to take a tune back with lots more and your comments, of course. This is music from Steppenwolf and Born to be Wild. Born to be Wild. As the time now, by the way, is 21 minutes past the hour of 4 o'clock. Wednesday!
The Richie Allen Show features doctors, scientists, academics and researchers
who have been banned by the legacy media.
Support Richie now by making a financial contribution at richieallen.co.uk.
Now, welcome back. 4:24 it is on Wednesday. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yeah, you came at me big time. I know it's Wednesday now. Hello to Neil. Love your taste in music, says Neil. Thank you, Neil. But I'll change your mind very soon, I promise you. I've got Tiffany. Tiffany's lined up for the next track, so you'll take that back, I reckon. Hi to Davey, hi to Gabriel. It is Thursday in many places now, he says, including Sydney. Good man. Terry says, back in the day, gags would go around like, what's the fastest thing on two legs? The answer, an Ethiopian following a bread van. Exactly. Exactly. Nobody died. The people who told and retold those gags were not evil people. They weren't racists either. I explained, if you've just tuned in, you won't have a clue what I'm talking about. You need to skip back about 10 minutes or listen to the repeat. You might then have an idea. Ardell says, Richie, my friend and his son share what would now be considered racist or hateful type jokes on our WhatsApp group. They hurt nobody, but I fear the opening up of encryption to the authorities will soon end that. Yes, police forces around the world, they want back doors placed on WhatsApp and other messaging applications, do they not, Ardell? And maybe at the moment you've got the major players like Meta saying, no, we won't give it, we won't. But I don't believe them either. I will not believe them either. Now, let's talk about this. Do you remember a silly jingle? Back in 2020, to me, and I do mean this. Why would you say that, Richie? Do you not mean everything? Of course I mean everything. But 2020 feels a long time ago now to me, sometimes. Sometimes I live in a nether world, me. Like many insomniacs, a nether world. Times when you're floating in and out of consciousness. And I mean when you're sitting up in your living room on a Saturday. And your tiredness is such that you're floating in and out. I live in this nether world and I have these ideas and these dreams and things. And sometimes I find it hard to even believe that 2020 actually happened. But it did happen. And once in a blue moon, I'll drag a random Richie Allen Show from any time between March 2020 and December 2020 just to listen to it. And I was full of fun and mischief back then, taking the royal piss out of the lockdowns and everything else. That's what I did a lot of the time, to try and make some sense of it through satire, and sometimes not even satire, because that would imply that I'm an intellectual or that I have some skills. No, a lot of the time it was just crude nonsense on my behalf, but you know, some of it was funny. And I would make stupid jingles like this one. Remember this?
Man Hancock's Long COVID.
Long COVID, right? Because they were talking about long COVID in mid 2020. Hilarious. Today, long COVID was everywhere. Long COVID. Do you have long COVID by any chance? If you tell... No, you don't have long COVID. Right. So, according to the iPaper, scientists could be a step closer to establishing what causes long COVID. Now, long COVID is lazy cow syndrome. That's how I see it anyway. It's lazy cow syndrome. You're just a lazy cow. We know that post-viral syndrome, or syndromes associated with recovery from flu and other viruses. Pretty common. We've known about them since, again, not since Moses was in short trousers, but maybe since the baby Jesus took his first steps in Nazareth. We know that sometimes it's so rotten, the infection, that it could take several weeks and even a couple of months in the worst case for you to feel like you're getting back to yourself. Now, they're claiming that 2 million people in the UK... Sometimes I can't say things out loud without laughing. They are telling us that nearly 2 million people in the UK are currently afflicted with long COVID.
What kind of fuckery is this?
I don't know. I do not know. And scientists are telling us they are very close to establishing what causes long COVID, because they've found fragments of the virus present in some people 2 years after the infection. It's hoped the findings could pave the way for new treatments, yeah, vaccines probably, for the condition thought to affect nearly 2 million people. Unbelievable, that's the eye. In two related studies, researchers in California found pieces of SARS-CoV-2, referred to as COVID antigens, lingering in the blood up to 14 months after infection, and for more than 2 years in tissue samples. Long COVID, which they were already talking about in mid-2020. I have put forward a theory. I'm just going to be Irish. Forget about the THs. I put forward a theory, right? Where I suggested that long COVID was their get-out-of-jail card for when the vaccine started killing people. I have no evidence to support that. It's just a theory, okay? This morning, I heard one of the weirdest news reports I've ever heard on BBC Radio 5 Live. I was in Stretford, running, dodging the traffic. Do you want to hear this? This is weird. Now, bear in mind, I have a very warped sense of humour. So the things I find funny, sometimes, luckily enough, we meet in the middle and you find them funny too. But oftentimes you don't find them funny and you're bewildered. I find this kind of funny. It's a report on BBC Radio 5 Live, the news programme of the year, the radio news programme of the year, with Rachel Burden and Rick Edwards. It's Rachel we are going to hear. It is about long COVID and,
4 years on since the COVID pandemic, we are talking this morning about long COVID. And that's partly because one of our listeners, a guy called Simon Duckworth,
Simon Duckworth. Jesus, sorry. I opened two mics together. That's two mistakes now. That's two mistakes. I first of all got the day wrong. Now I've opened a second mic at the same time to give you that weird echo sound there, yeah. I'll carry on. We'll see, can we make it 5 or 6? Simon Duckworth, and then she laughs. Simon Duckworth. It's a good name, that's a real Northwest name. A real. You'll remember William Tarmy. Bill Tarmy used to play Jack Duckworth, the lovable rogue in Corrie for many, many, many years. So what about Simon Duckworth?
Simon Duckworth, excuse me, he's 47 years old. Got in touch with us to share his own story.
He reached out now.
He's been suffering with long COVID for almost 3 years now.
And he's had it for 3 years.
He's not on his own. According to the Office for National Statistics, an estimated 1.9 million people living in private households have the condition.
Private households.
So to try and really understand what it's like, we got Simon to record an audio diary of a day in his life. And here is what a typical morning routine involves for him.
This is madness. So they sent this guy a recording device and they said, Simon, we want you to record a typical day. What is it like for somebody who's been battling long COVID for nigh on 3 years? I was tempted to be a real dickhead about this and play some silly music. And I dug out Medication Time from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Right? We might use it. We'll come back to it. This is Deconstructing a Gag with Richie Allen on The Richie Allen Show. I'm deconstructing a gag. Would you like to hear Simon Duckworth doing a video diary for national radio about living with long COVID? You would. All right.
Morning. I've got a big day in prospect. I've got work, but I've got three main things that are going to take my energy. Thursdays is my day that I do a school pickup. I can't do a school collection more than once a week. It's just too tiring for me to do.
Can only do a school collection once a week.
So I've got that. My daughter's got a school play in the evening, so I'm going to go to that. I don't really know how I'm going to find that in terms of my energy levels and walking up the slope to and from school. I can usually park nearby. If it's too far away, then I wouldn't be able to do it. And I also need a shower this morning, and that sounds like
a piece of piss. Like you just step in the shower and wash yourself.
It's the common thing you just do.
What?
But I have to factor that in to my energy budget for the day.
Your energy budget for the day?
I have to think in terms of an energy budget.
An energy budget. So once a week I can do the collection. Got to get close enough to the school. There's a little slope. I won't be able to walk it. Even having a shower eats into my energy budget, said Simon Duckworth, who's got long COVID and he has had for 3 years.
I'm working today as well. But there's a amount of trepidation, really, because I don't know at the end of the day how I'm going to be feeling. But obviously I want to go and collect my daughter from school and then later on see her school place.
Yeah, you mentioned the school place.
So I'm determined to do those things. So
now he's out of the shower.
I've just had a shower and got dry and
the shower has nearly killed him, listen.
I feel exhausted.
He's absolutely fucked after the shower. He's laughing though.
So I've also taken a look on my phone. I've got a wearable that tracks my
He has a wearable, tracks his heartbeat.
Heart rate. So when I left my last message, it was about 65 BPM.
But after the shower?
And now it's jumped up to 130 BPM in the shower.
In the shower. What are you doing in the shower, Simon? Tell the truth. Are you playing with your willy? What's going on? How could your heartbeat be in the mid-60s but go up to 130 from having a shower? Come on, man. He was messing around with his tallywhacker.
So, I'm...
He's knackered.
I'm now dressed and at my desk in our box room. Fortunately, I can work from home.
I can relate to him. I grew up on a council estate. It's nice to have a box room. In fact, I live in a council house that used to be a council house. There's a box room too. Our box room is absolutely tiny. He's properly destroyed now, having had a shower and gotten dressed. This is Simon Duckworth doing a diary of life, a day in the life of a long COVID sufferer, 3 years.
A bit out of breath because...
Why?
Went downstairs to get a cup of tea.
I haven't a clue what he said there. I've been on the phone to NASA today and their audio cleansing experts, guys who can listen to audio. I haven't a Scooby-Doo what he just said there, have you?
Went downstairs to get a cup of tea.
He went downstairs to get a cup of tea. Now I figured it out.
So I've been down the stairs.
That must have nearly killed him.
And then back up the stairs.
Back up. That's eaten into the energy budget, I would imagine.
And my heart rate is still going. Still well over 100, so...
Why not get one of those chair lifts that go up the stairs like Mrs. Deagle in Gremlins? One of those things, remember? Mrs. Deagle. Yeah. I don't understand why, with 3 years of long COVID, you wouldn't have a stair lift like.
Have a little calm down. I've got breathing techniques to try and bring it down a bit and just...
The BBC broadcast this morning, I swear to God. You'll be able to hear it on BBC Sounds.
Right. Time to start work.
Simon then recorded something for us a little bit later that day after the school pickup.
Well, obviously, yeah, because it's a daily diary. So let's hear about what happened after the school pickup. It's Simon Duckworth reporting exclusively for the BBC on coping with long COVID and your energy budget.
Back at home, having done the school pickup. Hopefully I'll have enough energy to take my daughter back to school and then we'll watch the school play, which I'm looking forward to.
Except?
It can...
This is his daughter now.
...be quite difficult, but also be a bit frustrating because it takes Dad longer to do things, like coming back from school, like we're doing right now.
Yeah.
And it's doing walks and it's playing games.
What about if we went out as a family?
It'll be hard. And it's basically, it would be quite tiring because sometimes we have to push you in the wheelchair.
He has a wheelchair.
You're pretty good at pushing me in the wheelchair.
Mm-hmm. Especially on roller skates.
Especially on roller skates. Where the fuck is health and safety?
What about the scooter?
She pushes her daddy in a wheelchair on roller skates.
It's quite fun. Plus, I like beeping the horn. Plus, it helps you get around.
Because what used to happen, you and Mum and Louise used to leave me at a bench, didn't you?
You used to abandon them at a bench. Just fuck off. We'll have the walk. We'll come back and get you, you lazy cow.
And then you'd go for a walk round, and then you'd come and collect me at the end.
Yeah, because you'll be tired.
But now, scooter, we can go right around the park, can't we?
Yeah. Plus, sometimes when you're on a bench, you like having a nice drive round in it.
It's not that much of an adventure.
It is, especially when you go really fast.
So we've parked at the school, we've got there half an hour before we need to, just to make sure that I can get parked near school. So
for the play?
Actually, we're only 10 metres from the bottom of the slope up to the school. So that
10 metres from the slope up to the school.
That's helpful. I'm lying down in the car, I've put the seat right back so I can try and get as horizontal as I can just to get a bit of energy before the performance. Thanks.
That doesn't look weird at all to passers-by. So you're lying, you put the seat all the way back, you're lying down to gather a bit of energy to take on the 10-metre walk up the slope into the school.
Thanks, love. So yeah, I'll let you know how we get on.
Can't wait. I should have split this over 5 days, shouldn't I?
Okay, so I've now got home. It's now 8:40 in the evening, and I'm lying down. I'm absolutely bushed. It was great to be able to do that. Obviously, I walk slowly. I walk like an old man, very sort of slowly. It feels like you've run a race when you're walking. Just when your feet get leaden, it's that sensation. It's just really difficult to put one foot in front of the other when you're tired.
Well, there you go. It's a really, I think, insightful look into the life of someone living with...
Insightful.
The condition from...
What condition?
From Simon.
There. Shout out to Simon's daughter as well, who was excellent.
Yeah.
She was brilliant, roller skating behind her daddy in the wheelchair.
Yes, she was.
I think as well, when we talk about this, there's still a lot of suspicion and incredulity around long COVID as a condition.
And this surprises you?
Pick that up from some of the messages we're receiving and what was the health like of people with long COVID beforehand. And I think you just have to listen to him.
You have to listen to Simon Duckworth and take his lived experience as gospel. And anything else is just hate speech. You've got to take it as gospel. Listen, imagine that farce you just heard there is reality. It might very well be his reality. In fact, I'm not saying it isn't. The only question I'd be asking him is, how many of them mRNA jabs did you have, lad? To be honest with you. How many of them did you have? Because long COVID is monumental bollocks, isn't it? And don't take my word for it, nor should you ever take my word for anything, because most of the time I'm offering an opinion, of course. And I don't have any medical skills or qualifications. But many a learned man and woman in medicine say that long COVID is a load of old bollocks. It's coming up for 18 minutes to the top of the hour. You have to imagine that long COVID was the brainchild of those who knew they were going to be rolling out mRNA jabs, because this was all predetermined way before they announced lockdowns and pandemics. You'd have to imagine the vaccines themselves, if people are struggling to get around and to live their lives, as this guy claims, it must be taken into consideration. The jabs have to be considered, right? I would have said. Your messages, let me read a few of these for you now. Let me scroll on back. There's a lot, unsurprisingly. Hi to Michael, who says, Richie, have you heard about China making steaks out of poo? Disgusting, says Michael. Now, you've spelt steaks, S-T-A-K-E-S, but I think you mean steaks, as in beef. I have not, but I'm absolutely going to look this up. China making steak out of poo. I know they wanted to make meat out of... they have looked at making... growing meat in labs using our own blood cells, haven't they? They've looked at this. Hello to John, who says, wasn't it back in 2019 that this was said by Frank Hester? Why the 5-year wait to bring it up? That's John. Correct, John. It was back in 2019. At least that's what we've heard, anyway. Just been on a bus, says Rob in Birmingham. Hello, Rob. Somebody was wearing a mask. Chris says, Richie, I've registered my dad, who passed away recently on the yellow card scheme, as a vaccine death. Even though I have completed a detailed form, they've come back to me requesting more information, including drug history, coroner's report, GP details and more. Is it any wonder the yellow card scheme is greatly underreporting vaccine deaths? Asks Chris, I bet they take your word for it. If you had reported your relative died from long COVID, that's a good shout there. Thank you. Gail says, Richie, maybe long COVID is actually down to all the jabs people have had. Like the bloke dragging an oxygen tank around because his lungs are fecked after having 8 of the jabs, says Gail. Thanks, Gail. Appreciate that. Wiz has been in touch to say he's watching Cheltenham in the background and an advert came on for Shingles Awareness Week. Get your jab. In small writing, it says, if you suffer side effects, contact your doctor or your nurse. Thanks, Wiz. Cheltenham, of course, yes, is ongoing. Jan has been in touch. Richie, it's no laughing matter. Me and the wife have had a yellow snot factory up our hooters and coughing like bastards, he says, Jan, for the best part of 2 years. Was only a couple of weeks free from it before it goes off again, lasting up to 3 effing months. It's like nothing we've ever experienced. Neither of us had the jabs, says Jan, or Jan, I should say. Never stuck a test up our noses, but it does coincide with our son beginning school. Shedding, asks Jan, or normal young kid's germ pool? We don't know, but I can tell you it's not a joke and not laziness. It's crap, says Jan. Thank you, Jan. Okay. Wow. Fair enough. Richie, people give Diane Abbott a hard time, says the window cleaner. But she was the first ever black MP to go out and vote with 2 different shoes on. That implies a certain eccentricity, though, doesn't it? You know, that's not stupidity. I'd say that's eccentric. And the reason I say this is because I've done something similar. I've not done the 2 odd shoes, but I've done something similar. I'm not going to say what I've done. David Brambo says, aren't the COVID virus antigens theoretical constructs anyway? To the best of my knowledge, the purported virus's DNA has never been independently characterised. And how would you know that, David? I'm going to be kind to everybody today, because I always am anyway. How do you know this idea that COVID hasn't been isolated? How do you know? I'll tell you why you think you know, because a truther told you. A truther. I don't know whether they've isolated COVID-19 or not myself. I will concede this. But I don't think it's likely that COVID never existed. That is not how I see it. But I'm open-minded. I always am, you know. David Keane found it funny. Long Rona. Neil came back to say long COVIDs is a scam for these morons attempting to get lifelong disability.gov payments. Neil's take on it. Yes. Yeah. Richie, a different Richie, obviously. I'm not sending messages to myself on air. He says, long COVID guy sounds like he's doing the I won't be coming into work today voice. That's a good shout. Hi to Michelle. People with long COVID, Richie. Convid, she says, I'd want to know the following. Jab status, diet, exercise regime, sleep, hygiene, whether they have a smart meter, potential radiation issues. Maybe the answers would contain some answers, says Michelle. Good point, Michelle. Absolutely. It's exactly where I would be. Hello to Paula. Yes. She says, Richie, I loved your clip during the madness when you knocked on Rothschild's door. Very funny. I swear to God, I don't remember that, Paula. You might be thinking of somebody else. However, not as funny as the story you told when at the pictures as a kid. Oh, that's right. a horse died and all the kids were bawling, but you laughed and got dragged out. That's right, the never-ending story. I found it funny. Yes, because I'm sick. Sick, Anne says, and the Oscar goes to... Yeah. Tim says, I wonder how many people that didn't take the injection have got long COVID. I'm guessing none. Richard says, by any chance, Richie, do you know how heavy this guy is? He sounds terribly overweight. You know, I did stop my run and go to BBC Sounds because on occasion, and on Twitter, on occasion, they do live stream the show on video, but they didn't. I wanted to see, was he a big lad, you know? Gary says, it's one of the first things I'd think of doing too, to contact a national radio broadcaster to describe my ailments in detail. Is he from Chatham House / MI5, asks Gary. Don't know, Gary. Lucy's in Northern Ireland and she says, fuck me, I'm getting panty, breathless, listening to this Duckworth dick, says Lucy. That's the comment of the day, Lucy. David's in Bournemouth. This fella sounds like someone phoning in sick when he's on holiday in Tenerife, laying it on with a trowel. Amen. Hello to Lloyd G. And the prize for the worst actor goes to Simon Duckworth. We give him a raspberry for it, will we? A razzy. Davey says, Richie, and as usual, the BBC do not ask, was he jabbed? Bet he was. Ian says, the clip is worthy of an Oscar. This one is from Shaps. Sorry, I can't take this guy serious. It's pitiful to listen to him. I really can't believe him. Dave Simpson, a lot of Daves around. If he's going about like that with a kid, he shouldn't have her in his care. He's got other medical conditions, says Dave. Mike came on to say the Zoe COVID study says 500 unvaccinated people even do have long COVID. Sue says, Richie, obviously you've never suffered from exhaustion. Sue, have you ever listened to the Richie Allen Show? I walk around with exhaustion, Sue. If you had, you wouldn't be so sneering about this poor man's condition. Bear in mind that long COVID is more than likely the result of the vaccine, as you said. No excuse for you to be so unkind, says Sue. I give over, Sue, will you? Jesus, if we can't laugh and take the piss out of things. I'm taking the piss out of the fact that BBC put the guy on there. It's ridiculous. It's propaganda, Sue. John's in Sydenham or Sydenham. I can only speak from experience, Richie, but we have three people who have had a very long time off work with long COVID. Those people have, for the past 2 years, been on light duties, so they're doing very limited work. Of note is that those people were, before COVID, the lazy people in the office, and to be blunt, fat and very unhealthy. Oh, we have a couple of people off work with long COVID. Yeah, before anybody ever heard of COVID, they were useless, lazy, fat bastards. It's exactly 10 minutes to the top of the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show. I think we're alone now. Music from Tiffany. We are alone. It's just you and me. You and me against the world. This is the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live from Salford City. The BBG coming at ya. Do, 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 do. This is the number one for about 17 years in the 1980s. Brilliant stuff. Music from Tiffany. I think we're alone now. I'm going out on a limb. 1988. I'm going to say that was a good year for music. Hi to Jen. Richie, my sister, who was a nurse in Temple Street Children's Hospital, was told she's got long COVID. I know rightly she was vax damaged, but can't tell her. I did try initially, but I was committed to a mental home for over a week, says Jen. Since then, I've lost my marriage, my children, and any way to make a living, she says. She lost her sense of smell, taste and voice for over 2 years and is under the care of a doctor in Dublin who, ironically, has prescribed her natural meds as a cure. Go figure. Jen, you'll have to send me a message. If you want to talk about this, we can obviously protect your identity and the identity of your sister. That's terrible. Jenny says, not truthers, Richie, actual scientists who have done experiments and proved that COVID is just a computer simulation which can be replicated without any virus being present. That is simply not true, Jenny. And I'm not going to get into why I don't have all day. That is not true. And you won't like to hear this, and I couldn't care less. Confirmation bias is a massive problem in the truther industrial complex. A massive problem. You don't listen to me. I am not saying that I know for a fact that COVID exists or existed. I don't say that or this, but there is absolutely zero evidence that COVID-19 as a virus, as a pathogen, doesn't exist or never existed. There is none. And for every scientist you say says it was never isolated, there's dozens and dozens who say it was. And not all of the dozens and dozens who say that COVID is a real thing, not all of them are fully on board with lockdowns and vaccines either. Okay? I've had doctors on this programme, and you've heard me ask them over the years, anti-lockdown doctors, not anti-vaccine doctors, but anti-COVID jab doctors. And I've said to them, what about this idea that COVID never existed? I always ask them, and they say it's bollocks. So what you're doing, Jenny, and you might accuse me of doing the same thing, but I'm different. I take a hugely different approach as a new take. I am not dogmatic about my position. I cannot say for certain that COVID was a real thing. But nobody can say for certain that it wasn't or isn't. And I interviewed a guy called Kaufman, who didn't do very well when I asked him about viruses and terrain theory and germ theory. You know, didn't, a little bit of gentle questioning, and he was, you know, he was backpedaling and stuttering and stammering. Come on. Let's be honest about it now. Good evening to Scottish John. Good evening to Jonathan, who says Simon should have gotten David Attenborough to do the narration. Yes, I would agree. Absolutely. Okay, time to talk about something else. It's exactly 3.5 minutes to the top of the hour, but we will stay with health momentarily. Let's stay with health. Let us go to Dublin and to RTE. That would be Morning Ireland, live from Dublin most mornings. It's Ireland's equivalent of the BBC Radio 4 Today programme, or maybe the BBC Radio Today programme is their version of Ireland's Morning Ireland programme, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, this is interesting. It made me laugh. Again, the things that make me giggle, not guaranteed to make you laugh, but today I'm on one, I don't care. Measles!
Now, you might have heard that an urgent appeal went out in the past 24 hours to passengers who travelled on a flight from Abu Dhabi to Dublin last weekend to come forward after a case of measles was confirmed on board.
How did they confirm a case of measles on board? I can't find an answer to this.
The passenger was on Etihad Airways EY45 last Saturday. It arrived into Dublin at 6:30 a.m. The HSE wants anyone who is pregnant, immunocompromised, or anyone who is travelling with children under the age of one to contact their local HSE. It is the third case of measles to be confirmed here so far this year.
Third, imagine, in a country of over 5 million people. Jesus Christ, lockdown! What are you waiting for? So this flight then from Abu Dhabi into Dublin. Somebody, it was declared somebody had measles, so there's a big manhunt on now. HSE is Health Service Executive in Ireland. It's basically the NHS in Ireland, right?
And a man in his 40s died from the virus earlier this year. We are joined by Dr. Ty Crowley, Chair of the GP Committee of the Irish Medical Organisation. You're very welcome to the programme.
Go on, Ty.
It's important, this call out, isn't it, because of how contagious measles
is. Jesus Christ. Why did you bring him on then? It's important, this call out, isn't it, she says. Why did you bring him on? What's the point? Why don't you just go full on GB News and just sit there and just offer your own opinions? Why did you bring him on? Why don't you ask him, what the fuck is all the fuss about? Some bloke was a bit feverish, was he? Who got off a flight and they found measles, did they? And you're launching a nationwide hunt for the people on the plane, really? What's wrong with you, man? She should ask him, but doesn't. Is.
That's right. So obviously, as we've said there, measles is quite contagious. So they were on a flight. The people were on a flight for about 8 hours.
They're on the flight about 8 hours now, so what do you know? We're trying to find them. Very contagious.
And in an enclosed environment, there was a high chance that the disease can spread in those environments.
There was a high chance that the disease can spread.
So the HSE are very anxious for, as you said there, the group of people, that anyone who was pregnant, immunocompromised, or people with children less than 1 year, that they will contact the HSE line.
Contact the helpline. We've set up a helpline for you. If you think you're on that flight, EYBC254, somebody had measles, we want you to come forward. We've got a big injection for you.
I suppose also for other people on the flight, that they would be self-monitoring over the next 3 weeks.
Self-monitoring for the next 3 weeks. No, they won't. They couldn't give a shit, really. Even if they do hear your news bulletin. Were we on that flight? Where are we, Sarah? Do you want to keep an eye on me for the next 3 weeks? No, didn't think so.
For any symptoms of measles.
Could the passenger who was infected, could they have been unaware that they had measles?
Well, firstly, measles presents for the first 4 or 5 days. They present with sort of a runny nose and a cough. And obviously, you know, these are fairly mild symptoms, so there's a high chance that they would be unaware that they have the disease.
Yeah, because measles is fuck all, really.
After a number of days, then they get red and watery eyes, and then the rash can present after 4 days.
Can present after 4 days, but quite often the rash does not present. Why do we know this? Well, because we take the trouble to do a little bit of research. Measles is harmless to the great, 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 great majority of people who meet it. It's a fact.
So initially, a lot of people are unaware they have the disease. So I suppose for people...
Just like a lot of people were unaware they had COVID.
People that were on the flight, it's very important that they self-monitor. And any symptoms of what they would describe as a mild cold, that they isolate at home.
Isolate at home. If you're on that flight now and you sneeze, could be a dust allergen issue, but we want you to stay at home lest you have the measles and lest you spread it around Ireland, where we found 3 cases this year already. Cavora G. Oring, 3! And a man in his 40s died of it. The guy was 28 stone, he hadn't worked for years. No, I don't know what he was. It finishes with this.
As we said, it's the 3rd case of measles confirmed here so far this year. And we know, sadly, a man died from the virus earlier this year. Why would someone die from measles? What would be happening?
Great question. Of course he doesn't answer it.
So the problem with measles...
You see, the problem with measles is they've asked me to come on here and scare the living bejesus out of the Irish people. So the problem with it is that, you know...
Measles, and it's easily preventable, first of all, Audrey. So I suppose we...
Didn't ask you that, dickhead. I asked you, how would somebody die with measles?
We take this opportunity that the best prevention for measles is to get vaccinated. And the vaccine rate has dropped in the country over the last number of years. So it's very important that if you haven't had a measles vaccine, we'd encourage all your listeners to...
How would people die of it? Fucker.
To get vaccinated. There are complications with measles. Some of them are mild, that they can get, people can get ear infections, but it can go on to pneumonia.
It can go from an ear infection to pneumonia.
And it can affect the nervous system, and that's the problem with measles, and it can cause death, unfortunately.
Well, the message is, as you say, to get vaccinated. That is the importance of the vaccine
well
in this
done.
Area.
Well done, Audrey. Audrey, when you get home, there'll be another story on your house, courtesy of Pfizer. Well done, love. Brilliant. Don't ask him any fucking questions. Right, how often would we see a death from measles? What would it be? 1 in 300,000? 1 in 1,000,000? Tig? Fucking Tig. Ridiculous name. Anyway, Brian says... Thank you, Brian. I read that. Hi to Andrea from Glasgow. Richie, away at the beginning of the scamdemic, I called long COVID lazy-itis. Total excuse for the furlough crew, she says. That's good, Andrea. I'll tell you why. Because the Office for National Statistics, I don't know, they're putting out statistics on how a lot of people are not looking for work. More people are not looking for work than previously were not looking for work. So there's more lazy arse feckers now than previously. And they're saying that the stay-at-home bullshit, the furlough, that this has had a big impact on people. I hear you, Andrea. Hello to Fred, who says, ask your listeners, I can't, Fred, because I'm not going to read, I'm not going to be here all day. He says, ask listeners about Peter Daszak. He might be the person used by Fauci to enhance COVID in the Wuhan lab, using something known as the EcoHealth Alliance Charity. What does anybody know about that? No doubt. So we're getting a bit of pushback. This is good. I like a bit of pushback. It's good when you argue with me. Brad says, Richie, it took me a year to get over mononucleosis. When I was a young lad, I had awful chronic fatigue, which maybe is something Simon Duckworth has got. I don't understand his being so out of breath with chronic fatigue, though, if that is what he has. My cousin says she has long COVID, as she's had chronic fatigue for about 2 years now. But I think she has long vax, says Brad. I wish she'd approach healing herself via reversing the effects of the vax rather than COVID. Thank you. Pedro says, I'm convinced the smart meters. I don't have one, he says, but they are outside my door in a communal cupboard. I'm convinced they are making me ill, but how would I know? I think the other five flats have them, and they are all in there, he says. This is the problem, Pedro. It might very well be affecting you negatively, you know? But how do you find out? Catherine says Duckworth's condition certainly affects his daughter. She sounds exhausted herself. That's right. Hello to Peter, who says, just switched on and listening to the COVID chat, pissing myself laughing, tears streaming down my face, time for a beer, says Peter. Thank you, Peter. Hello to Ali, who says, funny, I can't remember what I had for breakfast, but I can remember every word of I Think We're Alone Now. Yes, indeed. What did I do? Did I? Yeah. Ah, yeah, I know what I did. Yeah, I messed up. Hello to Mel, who says, regarding shedding, I've just started a treatment for MS, albeit reluctantly, as it works by depleting your B cells. Anyway, due to the MS treatment compromising your immune system, I've been advised to stay away from anyone recently vaccinated. All vaccines, especially live ones, including the nasal flu shot. It makes you believe shedding is real, says Mel. Thank you, Mel. No doubt. Hello to Don and Walkton. I wonder if they are still using the PCR test. They are, Don. They are. I overheard a woman speaking in a local shop recently, very recently, like days ago. And she was telling the shopkeeper, or the shopkeep, if you're posh, you say the shopkeep. Good evening, shopkeep. She was telling the shopkeep that she had COVID because she'd taken a test. Yeah. Now, she didn't say PCR test. She said she'd taken a test. Hello to William. I'm just discovering the amazing benefits of medicinal mushrooms. For instance, tiger milk mushroom has cleared up my chest infection in days. These Chinese medical shops that have been around for ages know all the secrets of these Chinese herbal doctors, and they are becoming widely known. Turkey tail mushroom, for example, is great for mental health and depression. Never heard tell of it, William, myself. Let's quickly, swiftly, without further ado, move on. Measles. No, we're not talking about measles. Were you on the flight, you were? Do you want to get in touch with me? 7:30, it is past the hour of 5 o'clock. Now, mentioned on the papers podcast, children will no longer routinely be prescribed puberty blockers at gender identity clinics, according to NHS England. They have confirmed no more prescriptions of or for puberty blockers given to children. We say woohoo, very good. This decision comes after a review found there wasn't enough evidence, surprise, surprise, that they are safe or effective. There's no evidence. Puberty blockers, which pause the physical changes of puberty, will now only be available as part of research. This comes weeks before an independent review into gender identity services in England is due to be published. An interim report from the review, published 2 years ago by Dr. Hilary Cass, had found there were gaps in evidence around the drugs. He called, or she called, I'm not sure if Hilary is a man or a woman, for a transformation in the model of care for children with gender related distress. The Tory MP, Miriam Cates, is very much interested in this. Here she is speaking to GB News today.
But the reason that this is really important is that firstly, we don't know that puberty blockers are reversible.
Quite.
That's not true necessarily
Quite.
At all. And people think about puberty as the kind of visible changes that people go through, you know, girls developing breasts, starting period, boys having facial hair. But actually it's all sorts of other physiological changes to the brain, to the bones, to growth that happened during puberty. You can't just pause biology in time. So this is an experimental treatment, and it's fairly well agreed that medical ethics says you don't experiment on children.
I'm just about to say, isn't that the point? How can you experiment on children as young as 11, 12, 13 and 14? It's terrible.
It is, exactly.
It's demonic.
Exactly, and 98% of the children who are prescribed puberty blockers do go on to cross-sex hormones, which absolutely isn't reversible, and we know has serious and permanent damage to children for their, well, adults, for the rest of their lives. I think the scandal here, though, is that we expect the NHS, we expect our healthcare system to be evidence-based, and, you know, when you go to the doctor for a treatment, you expect that whatever you're given has a strong evidence base behind it. And the scandal with the Tavistock Clinic is that it was driven by ideology, this belief that a child who feels like they're born in the wrong body should therefore have that feeling accepted at face value and being put on this pathway to permanent change. And that's the scandal here, that medics were able to continue under that belief for so long.
You like that bit where she says, you expect when you're given a medicine that the medicine has been cleared through evidence-based research. Wow. Now, I'm not exactly sure where Miriam Cates is on vaccines. I've no idea. I know she's not or wasn't a big fan of lockdowns, but didn't they inject millions of people in this country with no evidence whatsoever that the mRNA jab would be of any benefit to the recipient? And they had no evidence whatsoever that the jabs would not cause widespread harm. And yet they did. They rolled them out. And every one of us, I think, knows somebody. I'm pretty sure this is true. Do you know that? I paused for a moment there. I think each and every one of us knows a man or a woman that has been damaged by a COVID shot. No doubt about this. Before we hear from Miriam Cates again, because Cates was at Prime Minister's Questions and she was given leave to ask a question by the Speaker of the House, let me read some more of your messages. Anto says, Richie, re-isolation. For something to exist slash not exist, there has to be a record. If there is no record slash proof, etc., then surely it's all bollocks. Anto, how do you know there is no record of COVID-19? I've read scientists, again, many of them, who were against lockdowns and were completely against the jabs. They've said that they've seen the papers, the peer-reviewed stuff around the isolation of COVID-19, isolating it, categorising it, and then listing it. Now, I'm not saying any of this is true, I don't know. But people who come out screaming that COVID never existed and offer no evidence and say there's no record, well, how would you know there's a record? Are you a fucking scientist? You know, do you read the journals? You know, do you have scientific friends working in academia and working in hospitals? Are you in constant contact with scientists? You know, did you ask the scientists who isolated COVID to send you the stuff? I'm not having a go at you, Anto, not you. But anybody who says it never existed. You might be right, it might not have existed, I don't know. But you never offer any evidence. Just constant fucking repetitive nonsense. Never existed, it's a big hoax. All right, evidence? Oh, fucking evidence. You're a shill. No, I'm not a shill. I'm asking you for evidence. You dipstick. Not you. Not any of you listening. You know who I'm talking about. The idiot truthers, you know. Baird says, plain lady saw viral fragments hanging off a passenger and the captain immediately isolated, purified and sequenced the sample. Very good. From Baird. Jim says, Richie, long COVID is real. You will get it whilst listening to James O'Brien. That's from Jim and from Trudy. Thank you. Now, speaking of extremism, the Communities Secretary, Michael Gove, will apparently take to the House of Commons tomorrow, take to his feet, and he will finally reveal the draft new definition of extremism. Dear listener, are you an extremist? You are, you crazy bastard. Do you think COVID didn't exist, you extremist? And I jest. I jest, of course. And when I say I jest, let's take a step back. Let's take a step back there. You, if you believe that COVID has no right, or if you believe that COVID doesn't exist, you have every bloody right to believe that. You have every right to speak about that. And nobody should ever attempt to silence you. Yeah, we can argue with you, but you should never be silenced. But now we're talking about the definition of extremism being changed so that it can be broadened, meaning that it can become a bigger net with which to catch people they don't like. Presumably, people who say that COVID-19 doesn't exist will be classed, I suppose, in the future as extremists. Anyway, let's talk a bit about it. So Miriam Cates took to the... she stood up, she was called by Lindsay Hoyle, and she wanted to ask Sunak about the definition of extremism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Radical Islamists pose a serious threat to our nation's security. Yeah. And I agree with my right honourable friend that we must urgently address this. But reports that the government wishes to broaden the definition of extremism are concerning because in separating the definition of extremism from actual violence and harm, We may criminalise people with a wide range of legitimate views and have a chilling effect on free speech. So can my right honourable friend reassure me that instead of trying to police people's thought and speech, as those opposite clearly wish to do, the government will instead target the specific groups that foster terrorism and those who fund them?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
My honourable friend makes a good point, and that's why the strategy that I would urge her to wait for will, I think, be one that she can support, because it is our duty to make sure the government has the tools to tackle the threat that she rightly identifies and highlights. And this is absolutely not about silencing those with private and peaceful beliefs.
Liar, you fucking liar. It is exactly about policing, catching and punishing people with beliefs that you deem to be extreme or to be problematic.
Silencing those with private and peaceful beliefs, nor...
Let's hear that again, because he's lying. He's lying.
This is absolutely not about silencing those with private and peaceful beliefs, nor will it impact free speech, which we on this side of the House will always strive to protect.
Liar. Absolute liar. Donal was in touch. Hi, Donal. Richie, a video has been shared of the inside of Clonay Strand Hotel in County Waterford that is accommodating refugees. The video shows furniture, cutlery and other objects being thrown around. Where is it, Donal? The video, did you see it on Twitter? Let me know and I'll have a look at it if I get a chance. This is Wednesday's Richie Allen Show, by the way. It's me on my own today. It's how I wanted it today. Got some guests for you tomorrow, but I needed a break today. It's an ironic thing, me saying that, by the way. I needed a break. It's twice the workload doing it on my own. Finding and downloading 16 to 20 audio cuts, editing them. It's much easier to interview people, but I just fancied me and you having a chat, you know? I fancied it. Let's read a few more of your comments. Ray is in Limerick. I was on a flight from Qatar to Ireland last year, and a week later, I received a call from my local GP telling me that I was contact traced due to a case of tuberculosis on the flight. I find it troubling that the airline gave my personal details to Ireland's health service executive and then to my local GP. I told my GP to fuck off, says Ray. Good man, Ray. I also find it very troubling that they would track you down and tell you, you know, what you should do or shouldn't do. Somebody has TB. Madness, isn't it? The world we're going into. I'm going to be talking about this tomorrow on the show tomorrow with a guest, about the creeping authoritarianism. It isn't creeping, it's stampeding, of course, as we both know. Definitely. Hi to Chris Morell. Just a reminder, the word asymptomatic was never used outside of a medical journal before 2020. Before that, we used the word well. That's a great point, Chris. They introduced this bullshit notion, didn't they, in 2020, that if you were perfectly fine, no fever, no temperature, excuse me, well, a fever is a temperature, no runny nose, no fever, no nothing, you were going about, well, you might be carrying COVID. And therefore, this is why we want to build a testing regime. Do you remember that shit from Matt Hancock? May he burn in hell. He's alive, by the way, Matt Hancock. I'm saying may he burn in hell afterwards. Matt Hancock is the only human being in the last few years. Don't come at me now. Don't come at me. They're all a shower of bastards. But he's the only one where I began to actually hope that the Jesus and the God of the Old and New Testaments are actually real, and that hell is real, so that Matt Hancock can burn in the flames of hell. I despise that bastard more than any of them. I don't know why. What a son of a bitch. Claire says, Richie, you're making me giggle. Cheers, she says. You're welcome, Claire. I'm here to please. Shane says, Richie, on the naughty step with you now, this music is unacceptable. Which music? Tiffany? Or do you mean this music? Fantastic. Charlie Cheswick. It's like the Magnificent Seven. Can you name the characters? The residents of the hospital in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. We remember Louise Fletcher's Nurse Ratched. We remember Charlie Cheswick. We remember somebody called Billy. I can't remember any of the rest of them. Enough now. Thank you, Shane. Emma has been in touch. Richie, tiger milk mushroom is amazing for lung issues. Thank you, Emma. Bob is in Motherwell. The best remedy for everything is fasting, says Bob. Thank you, Bob. Christine says, Richie, I do wonder, will people with long COVID be claiming personal independent payments shortly? Here in the north, there are a lot of people using dyslexia and ADHD as a disability and a reason why they cannot go to work. It's crazy. Shortly, as the menopause will be added as a reason not to work. This is a wonderful opportunity for me to do a bit of James O'Brien-esque virtue signalling. If I was a virtue signalling dickhead, I'd take on Christine now. Well, of course, as the menopause should be listed as a disability, and if women do want to take annual leave to cope with the menopause, that's what I would say, but I don't know enough about the menopause. Billy Boy is in touch. The Tavistock Institute has been an institute for social change and all different nefarious matters for decades. Hello to another Sarah. Tess Laurie was shouting loud about evidence-based medicine and COVID jabs were not evidence-based. That's correct. Hello to John Fahey. Hello, John. How are you doing, John? Richie, I always considered COVID a rebrand of the flu. It might have been. It might have been. Don't you just love the Richie Allen Show? I mean, even those of you who lose your fucking shit, like, when I say something you disagree with, can you at least not give me the credit for making sure that every opinion is heard? Bring this guy on, Richie, and I do. What more do you want? I don't agree with you. Get over it. I'm not saying that to you, John, nor Jenny, nor anybody else. Start to learn to live with people who see things differently. Start to be thick-skinned enough, become thick-skinned enough that when somebody challenges you, you don't fucking melt down. You know, that goes for everybody. My God. Hi to Dan Warner. The way he says peaceful beliefs, meaning anything they don't like won't be peaceful. I hate him, says Dan. Dan's referring, of course, to Rishi Sunak. And an old friend of mine, very old friend and a dear friend, has been in touch. Ray Malone from Waterford, very well known soccer coach, soccer enthusiast. How you doing, Ray? He sent me the video from Clonay near Dungarvan. Problem is I'm radio, but I'm going to have a quick look at it anyway. Talk amongst yourselves. Asylum seekers smashing up the Clonay Strand Hotel in Dungarvan in Waterford with the staff or a staff member visibly shaken. Now, I'm not being a dipstick, but you can call me one if you want. I don't mind. Has anybody... I mean, why are they smashing up the hotel? And now, there's no good reason to smash up the hotel, but have they given any explanation for it? Let's hear if we can... It's a proper scene, all right. You've got young Asian-looking men running around, trashing a hotel that I visited many, many times over the years when I lived in Waterford. There's some women, they look Asian too, they look Muslim women. And they've done an enormous amount of damage to the foyer of the Clonay Strand Hotel and the dining area. That's a bit mad, Ray. Has anybody given any indication as to why what kicked off? Again, there's no justification for it. But has anybody any understanding as to why? I mean, surely they said why. Anyway, wow. 23 minutes past the hour. We might get some comment on that tomorrow. Ireland is becoming a hotbed, isn't it? It's coming to a boil in Ireland. There's no doubt about that. The Irish have had enough, I think. Christine came back to say, you're right, Richie, about everybody knowing somebody injured from the jabs. Our friends in England lost their son in early 2021. He dropped dead the evening of his jab, and his poor dad found him dead behind his bathroom door. A young lad who played football with my son in Limavady had myocarditis 3 weeks after his shot. He is a physiotherapist in the local hospital. As that's only two, I could go on, says Christine. There are another 40 or 50 comments now coming in, presumably about Clonay. Let me take a musical break. When I come back, I'll read those comments, and then I want to talk about assisted dying or euthanasia, because I think it's very interesting and it's very important that we talk about it. All right? All right. This is music from the great Satchmo, Louis Armstrong. It's We Have All the Time in the World. The Richie Allen Show, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. We have all. Music from Louis Armstrong. We've all the time in the world from Which Bond film? Can't remember. Can't remember. And I don't give a shite, to be honest, if I'm to be totally honest with you. Welcome back to the Richie Allen Show. Number of people are telling me, as far as they understand it, the asylum seekers being housed in the Clonay Strand Hotel in Waterford kicked off over the food. Now, this is pure speculation. There is no confirmation of this. Some of our listeners think the food. Thank you, Robert, amongst others. The food. The cheek of him. You come to Ireland, you better expect Irish food. Crew beans. Crew beans, yeah. Yeah, Irish stew, crew beans. What else should I? What else? What else? Ribs in Colcannon. Ribs in Colcannon. That's what happened. That's what happened. They sat down, all the asylum seekers, in the Clonay Strand Hotel, and somebody came up to them and said, lads, welcome to Ireland now. We're going to Fiji. We're going to Fiji. Your mammies would be proud of how we're going to Fiji. To all of these young Asian men. And they brought out trays and trays of ribs in Colcannon. And the Muslims had an absolute meltdown because ribs obviously come from, not always, not exclusively from pigs, but generally they do come from pigs. I reckon we've gotten to the bottom of it on the Richie Allen Show. That's brilliant the way we can do that, just like that. We've solved the mystery. They brought out ribs in Colcannon and they probably brought out a few tins, because we don't say cans in Ireland. We are unique in the world. We say a tin of Budweiser. We say a tin of Carlsberg. Fucking Egypts we are. Everybody else around the world says cans. We say tins. So they brought out ribs Colcannon, ladles of the stuff now. And they brought out a few tins of Guinness and they said, lads, great to have you here. And the Muslims just went absolutely fucking berserk. And who could blame them is the question. It's unbelievable racism. I've no idea, but I tell you what, the video is disturbing. You wouldn't want to be caught up in the middle of it now. I don't mind telling you. 29 minutes past the hour. A few more of your comments before I move on. Mark came back to me. Hi, Mark. Richie, I don't know whether it exists or not, the COVID, but I haven't seen any convincing evidence for its existence. Only scientists saying they've isolated it, which is a bit dubious. Mark, you might be right. It's a bit dubious. You might be. Listen, but can I ask you, Mark, please now, if a scientist showed you some evidence that a virus exists, as a layman like me, I'm asking you sincerely, what the fuck would you know? Here's some data. Here's some slides. You wouldn't know, Mark, would you? They could show you anything. They could take a slide, stick it in their mouths. They could scrape the inside of their cheeks like we did in science class years ago. And they could show that to you and say, that's COVID. You wouldn't know any different, Mark. Unless I'm wrong, unless you've got some scientific background. In which case, aren't I the effing Egypt? Elizabeth says, I read the migrants objected to the spicy food. Quite possibly. You call this a kebab, do you? Do you? That's how it kicked off. Yeah. You call this a kebab. Hello, Anne. Assisted dying should be rebranded murder. Yeah. Keir Starmer had a phone call with the broadcaster Esther Ranson. She used to do That's Life for the BBC for years and she set up Childline. She's a very good broadcaster, Esther Ranson, back in her day. She didn't, you know, she wasn't everybody's cup of tea. But she was good, right? She's dying, sadly. Her daughter is a formidable woman. We'll hear from her in a moment. But she wants the UK to do what countries in Europe have done, some countries, and introduce legislation to make assisted dying legal so that people who want to end their lives do not have to travel to Switzerland, which is what people generally tend to do here. And in this country, if I was dying, say, please God, not soon, but if I was and I decided to go to Dignitas and my better half was to accompany me, she could be arrested on our return. And this has happened before. So we'll come to this now, I think, and then we'll come back to the Clonay Strand Hotel before I finish the programme. Thanks, Ray, for the update. Thanks to Robert and everybody else. Find out what you can for me. I reckon it's the ribs in Colcannon. Tins of Guinness, no doubt about that. Right, so ITV News were in the room when Keir Starmer spoke with Esther Ranson and they filmed it. Starmer says, yes, if we form the next government, we will support introducing a bill to make it law so that people can end their own lives here. We'll do that, he says. Here he is speaking with Ranson as filmed by ITV. Come on then. I don't know what's going on now. We should be hearing Keir Starmer. But we're not. I don't know why.
We are going to commit to this.
I know why. I didn't properly edit the clip from the start. I didn't top and tail it properly. Okay, that happens. Right, here he is. Starmer.
We are going to commit to this. I'm personally committed to it because, as you know, the current law is a complete prohibition ban on assisted suicide. And then it's left essentially and in reality to the chief prosecutor, so me when I was sitting in that role for 5 years, to decide which cases go forward and which don't. And I tried to get that right in all the cases I saw. But that's not a very good way of doing it. It ought to be for Parliament to decide. I'm personally in favour of changing the law. I can give you my commitment, Esther, absolutely, that if we are privileged enough to win the election, then we will make time for this vote. It'll be a conscience vote, obviously. But that's why cross-party support is going to be really important.
Right, so that was Keir Starmer, OK. Now, Esther Ranson's daughter is Rebecca Wilcox, and she was on Times Radio. They first asked her, while it might be morally straightforward, amazingly, the presenter said it might be morally straightforward. He said it isn't practically straightforward, so it can't happen that quickly. Here's Rebecca Wilcox.
So what I would say is that there was a poll on every UK constituency. A majority voted in favour of assisted dying, so the public wants it. Why are we letting the public decide about Brexit, but not about something like this, which is controlling their lives so directly? And yes, I do see that some people fear safeguarding issues, hence Keir Starmer saying safeguarding with teeth. But we are, as I've said so many times before, we are not doing this from nothing.
Yeah.
There are 400 million people around the world who are living with assisted dying regulations. Legislation has been written that protects the vulnerable from the nefarious view. And why is it? Mum made the comparison that not having assisted dying because of the criminal few is like not choosing to let us drive because there are some bad drivers. Mm. And bad cases make bad laws. And at the moment, we have a bad law that is confusing, that is hurting people, that is promoting an unsustainable system of loved ones having to watch their relatives die so painfully or discovering... Sorry, it makes me so upset because the stories that I've heard of discovering loved ones who committed suicide in the most violent, painful of ways because they couldn't get the medical help that they needed.
Before we hear a bit more from Rebecca Wilcox, please feel free to shoot me down, right? Are there people living with terminal illnesses where their symptoms, where their pain is horrendous in 2024? Is that a reality? I'm asking because I really don't know. I have listened to the anti-assisted dying brigade because I'm not in favour of assisted dying legislation because of where it can lead. Remember that story we covered on this programme about 4 years ago about the 3D printable execution? I say execution, it's unfair. It's not execution, but the 3D printable euthanasia pods. Do you remember? I wrote an article for the website about it. So the 3D printable euthanasia pods, which can be rolled around, and pretty much what happens is you get in, and when you're ready, you compress or you push a button, excuse me, even, and then nitrous oxide is pumped in until you die, as far as I understand it. I've a huge problem with this. Let me know, are there people today enduring what we would have called bad deaths? Is that still going on? Let's hear a little bit more from Rebecca Wilcox.
Do you think that your mum might get in touch with Rishi Sunak and you might get in touch with Rishi Sunak and say, can you do it in this parliament?
Do you know, we have tried to get in contact with Rishi Sunak. I'm wondering what's going on there. Maybe you have some sway.
I personally know the Times might have a little bit. We could give it a go. We know we talk to the government every day. We can make this point to them. Just say to them, what would you say to the government? We'll put it to them.
I would say, for people like my mother, who have given their lives to campaigning for the greater good, for talking for the underrepresented, for you know, she is one in thousands who need them to make a decision now. And not making a choice on this debate is still making a choice. So just backing away, saying, oh, we'll do it after the election is still a choice, is still a political move, and it's not the right one.
I said on the papers this morning, we know how badly wrong doctors can get things in diagnosing patients and in treating patients, even in this day and age. We know this. Every few weeks or every couple of months, we hear terrible cases through the pages of the British press, the Irish press, right? Even the documentary programmes like Panorama. Doctors get it wrong all the time. They might diagnose a patient as terminally ill who might not be. I said this morning. The prognosis could be wrong, and that the patient is not, in fact, going to die soon. And it might be years, right? A person might be receiving poor medical care, unknowns to them, and that there are other ways of alleviating or managing their condition or their pain. What about if somebody who says, excuse me, I want to end it all, is actually not really thinking along those lines and is in fact kind of giving a kind of a cry for help kind of a thing? There's so much to this, isn't there? You know, I spoke to a disabled person years ago and she said to me, you know, the problem with this is, one of the problems with this is, it sends out a message that it's better to be dead than to be sick or disabled. And the disabled woman I spoke to, she said, Richie, this is going on already. She said, not. She didn't mean euthanasia is going on already. We know it is. We know do not resuscitate notices. We know all about that. But she said, they're already offering people terminations if they find some anomaly in the fetus when they do their scans. My disabled pal said to me, if they introduce euthanasia, if they legalise it, that will expedite, the other side of it will expedite. You'll see even more children aborted based on this or that or some observation made by the maternity care, by the prenatal care givers in hospitals. The subtext, you know, some lives are not worth living. And I agree with this. Didn't we, please help me out, I'm live, I don't have a producer. Wasn't there an issue where, after a terror attack in Belgium, wasn't there a young person who said that life was not worth living anymore and was diagnosed as being terribly depressed and went as far as to booking into a clinic in Belgium where that person was going to take his or her life? I think they might even have gone ahead with that. That's the sort of thing, you see, that it leads to. I want your thoughts on this before we run out of time today. It's already 19 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Listen, a number of you are getting in touch about Clonay Strand Hotel in Waterford to say that it is believed now that the food or the quality of the food might very well be the issue. I told you. I didn't solve it. But that the food might have started the riot there. There are videos of this, pictures of this on social media. A friend of mine sent me one a short time ago. They objected to spicy food, allegedly. You can see in the video, it's kicking off. The video doesn't show any... The video doesn't appear to show any member of staff being physically assaulted. It shows people throwing things around and a great big mess. I'm not saying nobody was assaulted, I don't know, but the video doesn't seem to show that. And like I said, as for the reason, it's speculation at the moment about the food in the hotel. The Clonay Strand. God be with the days of travelling out there for a few drinks on a Sunday at Dungarvan. Now, thank you for your messages. They are pouring in. Excuse me. Mysterious Dave says, Richie, my daughter had the MMR jab rollout at school today. She didn't have it, obviously, but went along to support her friend. And she said it was carnage, with children fainting, children being sick everywhere and feeling horrendous. And that was only part of her year group, and that's according to Dave. She went along to support a pal and said children were fainting, some were being sick, and some others were feeling horrendous. Thanks for that, Dave. Hi to Lee Bishop. Hi, Richie, he says. great chat, as always, you're very kindly. We will never know if COVID ever actually existed, but what I do think is they never treated any normal respiratory illnesses in 2020 / 2021 and just called them COVID. Thanks for what you do, says Lee. Thanks, Lee, I don't do very much, but you're very kind. Yes, I'm completely open to this. Of course, flu miraculously disappeared, didn't it? Didn't it? In 2020, 2021. Do you remember that audio clip? I don't have it now. I know I don't have that audio clip. But of Matt Hancock doing an interview with whatever, whoever. And he said we were lucky that flu pretty much disappeared last year. There wasn't a single case of flu, he said. We were lucky. You know, meaning is that if flu had done what flu normally does at winter time, which is rear its ugly head, alongside COVID, he was basically saying we would have all died. He didn't say that. He said it would have been even worse. He said, we're lucky. And of course, we talked about this at the time on the Richie Allen Show. We talked about it. We said, yeah, of course. What you know, some people will be, you know, having flu and other seasonal respiratory infections. And they will undoubtedly be labelling these as COVID-19. There's no doubt that went on during that time period. I would agree with it. How could I not agree with it? Absolutely right. Seamus came back to say, you've encapsulated euthanasia in one show, he says. Tiffany and the argument is in favour. Louis Armstrong and one wants to live. That is genius, Seamus. That's quite right, Seamus. That's right. Nothing wrong with Tiffany now. Anthony says, if they keep on about germs, tell them they're both theories, says Anthony. Theories, yes. All medicine is theory. All medicine is being practiced. Gabriel says, man sitting at the bar says to the barman, and what do you do? What do you think of euthanasia? Ah, sure, says the man. They're no worse than the youth in Ireland. I butchered that on your behalf, Gabriel. Very good. I've heard it before, though. So many messages. Peggy's been in touch. I think the asylum seekers in County Waterford in the hotel went crazy when they saw their dinner contained potatoes again. Yes. That's right, Peggy. And who could blame them? How often did we say it when we grew up? For fuck's sake. Not spuds again. And if it's not spuds, it's chips, which are spuds, chipped and fried. I'll give you that, Peggy. Sounds good to me. Christy's been in touch. He says, I think I heard someone in the video screaming, we want no more potatoes. We've had enough of the potatoes now. Wonderful. Maria was at the vet. She's in shock. Veterinary charges have made the news here this week in this country. Vets are the greatest shower of robbers and gangsters since the five families of New York. Got back, Richie. I'm in shock. £1,200 estimate for the cat's dental work. Maria? No, I won't say that. That'd be terrible. I won't. I love cats too. I do, I love cats. £1,200. A checkup and some painkillers for him today was £82. The cat isn't insured, and even if he was, dental work isn't included. Thinking of selling one of the kids. Maybe the older one. As then we can cash in the Fiesta too. I am joking, of course, in case social services are listening. Vets are greedy bastards. That's what they are. You see, I'm going to go into one of my long-winded rambling stories now. I'm not. Don't go anywhere. Look, when we were younger, you know, I grew up in Ballybeg and then later on Browns Road, Belvedere Drive in Waterford, and we had a dog. A lot of our neighbours had dogs. Vets were usually older men and women, or they were the children of previous vets who had been in the area for years. Vets were family businesses. These days, vets have become chains. They are chains now. There is only one independent vet within a 10 square miles of me. As far as I understand it, that might be an exaggeration. Let's say 5. And it's a woman in Swinton, or Eccles, I think. And she can't take on new patients or new animals because she's up to her tonsils in animals, right? The vets on offer around here are chains. And you haven't a clue which vet you are going to see each time you go in. It's usually young people, they're usually Eastern European, and before you call me xenophobic, I've got to say they're usually lovely. They're usually lovely and caring, but you never see them again. And the fees are astronomical. And these days, they've begun insulting their clients. Like I rang up for Bobby Jean, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago. Routine, right? Routine thing. They demanded I pay them on the phone there and then for the consultation. I mean, that's an offensive thing to say to a client. Somebody who's been on your books for a few years. We want the money up front. Why? I'll pay you after she's had her consultation, as has been the custom for years and years and years. Vets are bastards, but not the vets themselves. I should be specific. The companies they've got to work for. Young guy from Italy. He was a vet for a while at Companion Care in Salford. And I said to him, you're too good for this shit. Why don't you get out and open your own practice? And of course he gave me the look, right? And I said, yeah, you're right. You're right to give me the look. I said, I'm a fucking idiot. You're absolutely right. Where would I get the money, Richie? Business rates, rent, insurance. We've no choice but to come to work for these corporations. Believe me, he said, the Italian bloke, I don't like it. I can't stand it, he said. But what else am I going to do? I don't set the fees. I don't charge the exorbitant 5 times markup on the medication. That's a tip, by the way. When we take one of our pups to the vet, on the rare occasion when they say she might need a prescription for some anti-inflammatories, we say, give me the prescription and I will buy it online. They don't like it, but they don't have a choice. You've paid for the consultation, you've had it, they must give you the prescription. They will ask you for £60 or £70 for basic anti-inflammatory medication. You will find the same medication online for £17.50. We've done it all the time. I know we were talking about more important things now, but that gets my goat. So I'm sorry to hear about that, Maria. No pun intended. But look, we do anything for our animals. Claire says in Leitrim, I think the late stages of cancer are incredibly painful. There's only so much morphine you can give somebody without killing them. My dad passed away from cancer in November 2021, and it wasn't pleasant. Thanks, Claire. Thanks for sharing that. So you reckon your dad, given the opportunity, might have liked to go out on his own terms, whereby he could have had a bit of a send-off maybe, and then with dignity then maybe taken a cocktail of drugs and then said, right, I'm slipping away. I do understand this, you see. I'm not dogmatic about my anti-assisted dying. It's just where it leads in the end. It's where I think they wanted to lead in the end. But thanks for sharing that. Because I wondered about that. You know, I'm told all the time by people, palliative care is great these days. You know, nobody should worry too much about, you know, dying of a terminal illness because palliative care is so advanced these days, nobody's in pain. Thank you for sharing that, Claire. You know, thank you. Hi to G-Man. Canada has made medical assistance in dying. According to a local newspaper, they asked a woman who wanted to get a wheelchair ramp installed had she considered MAID. Not only do I know that story, G-Man, I read it out on the Richie Allen Show. Or the papers, that's right. A woman who contacted her local authority because she needed a wheelchair ramp, which are very expensive to put in. They asked her had she considered killing herself. Honest to God, that's a true story. You see, this is where it goes. In my opinion. Alice says, Richie, Charlie Bird, Irish journalist who died recently, very famous Irish journalist who worked for RTE for many decades. She says, Alice does, he went through hell. Did he die of motor neurons disease, Alice? I think he might have done. Assisted dying is murder. Anyway, you come straight back if you die that way, she says, if you believe in reincarnation. It would be so open to abuse. I can see an elderly parent being finished off so an offspring can get his or her paws excuse me, on the farm. Now, they promise this won't happen, you see. They tell you that they will put in safeguards along the way to make sure they know that the person who has decided to end their own life isn't doing so under duress or because they feel they have become a burden. The government says, don't worry about this, I'm losing my voice a little bit now, but don't panic. I just need some water, but I'm coming up to the end of the programme in any case. That's right, Alice, I see that too. Hi to Julie. They've been euthanising people for years. Now they want to legalise it so those who do it and have been involved don't get arrested. As for the morphine thing, one of my aunts on my father's side, in inverted commas, father, right? One of my aunts had died of cancer in the 1980s. Her name was Josephine. She lived in Kilmacow, which foreigners find funny. Kilmacow, what a wonderful name for a village. Kilmacow's in Kilkenny, in Ireland, right? In Leinster, in Kilkenny, just across the bridge from Waterford. Now, she apparently had a terrible death. And speaking of euthanasia, in the end, it was understood that back then, the doctors did incrementally increase the pain meds so that the person would just slip away. The doctors have been practicing euthanasia for years and years and years and years, knowing that an increase in the dose here or there would be enough for the person to disappear. But I'm against it. I at the moment, I'm completely against it, you know. No doubt about it. My mate Jean Ann's been on. Usually the voice of reason. Depends, she says. I used to think very black and white about it until a cousin of mine, very young, got the most woeful crazed dementia, a death sentence with utter horror beforehand. And that changed my mind because she suffered dreadfully. And so it's more complex. Says Jean Ann, I think it is. Excuse me. I take some water now, but I'm just about to wrap up, so I won't. I'm drying up. Thank you for all the producers, assistant producers today, with all the updates from the Clonay Strand Hotel in Waterford, where it's all kicked off. No pork, I tell you. That's what it was. Ribs and Colcannon. And they just went mental. No idea. I'm sure it'll make the press tomorrow. The Irish papers and the Irish radio shows will have a listen to it and see what they come up with. We'll talk about it. In the meantime, I'm going to take my leave of you. That's been a fascinating 2 hours, if I do say so myself. Thanks for listening. Back with you tomorrow in the morning with the papers. And then the Richie Allen Show returns 4 o'clock tomorrow. And I have a couple of very interesting guests for you to meet tomorrow, Thursday. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. If you're in Salford, it's bin night. Get your bins out. It's the brown, the blue, and the pink tonight. Public service broadcasting. At its absolute finest, I tell you. This is Wild Mountain Thyme. Thyme. Wild Mountain Thyme from Caledonia. From your BBG, good evening, goodbye, good night. See you tomorrow. Bye now. Oh, the sun.